Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report. I want to thank each and every one of you. First and foremost, I want to thank every man and woman who has served in our military. Today is Veterans Day, in honor of the veterans, of course. We open up with that. But again, thank you. You know, thank you not just to you who served, but to your families as well for
Absolutely.
The sacrifices they've made. And, you know, I extend this Veterans Day, in my mind anyway, not just to the military, although that's obviously, you know, its origins, but I look at members of our police forces as well. And I'm talking about the street cops, the beat cops, the police officers that, you know, every time they walk out the door, they don't know whether they're coming back. And I know you've seen battle as well. But again, to our veterans and their families, thank you. Thank you. And please, you know what? If you know a veteran, and I know it's late at night, please extend your thanks. Do something nice for them. We owe them beyond gratitude. I mean, it's just, it really, we do. Folks, I just want to mention one other thing too. Did you know my daughter is just a fantastic, amazing photographer? Well, she is, and she's got this amazing series of photographs. And Joe, you made a joke the other day about she was a good sport when you threw her in the cages of the wildlife, and that was, I thought that was, I keep thinking about that. But you know, God has some beautiful and exotic creatures. Jackie has teamed up with JD and his wife, JD's wife Bridget, over at blesseddayever.com. That's blesseddayever.com. And they've created this amazing wearable collection with different designs and different products like t-shirts and pillows and hats and coffee mugs. And they're creating new things every week. Go to blesseddayever.com and look for the Jackie Hagmann collection. Yeah, she got a kick out of that when I said Jackie Hagmann collection. She's like, well, it was just funny. Blesseddayever.com. What a great idea. And you know, why advertise Ralph Lauren, the you know, little polo, or those creepy Illuminati glorifying companies when you can be a living billboard for your faith?
Yeah, when I was in school, everybody was so caught up in, you know, you have to have name brand clothes. Yeah,
exactly.
And, you know, you get out of high school and you get a little bit older, you realize that you just want to wear what's comfy and what looks nice, regardless of what the brand is. But if you're going to be wearing something that is advertising for somebody else, you think of celebrities and even race car driving. You know, the race cars are full of different companies that pay to have their logos and names on those race cars. And companies pay celebrities to wear shirts that, you know, have different name brands. You see on the red carpet, who are you wearing? Who are you wearing? Well, this is your opportunity to advertise the gospel.
That's right. Be a living billboard for your faith. BlesseddayEver.com. Oh, and you know what? 10% off, Joe. 10% discount with using the promo code Hagmann. So I just wanted to give
thank
a great
you,
shout out. JD, thank you so much. Bridget, thank you. And of course, my wonderful daughter, Jackie. Now, folks, you've heard of Oath Keepers. Oathkeepers.org. You know the organization. Stuart Rhodes, you know the name, the founder of Oathkeepers.org.
He's been on our show in the past.
Yes, he has.
It's been a little while.
Yep.
And we have him back here this evening as we are looking at another consecutive night of anti-Trump protests from New York City to Atlanta. So much going on.
Yeah, and I will say this. I wrote an article. It appears on, it's right now active on the cover of CanadaFreePress.com as well as HagmannReport.com about the Marxist threat we face from within. I had the opportunity to speak with Mr. Rhodes earlier, right before the show. And we spoke, well, he spoke about, we both did, about the threat from within and the dangerous times which we're in between now and inauguration and the anti-Trump sentiment, the anti-American sentiment. Folks, the threat is not over. These communist infiltrators, the infiltrators that have made their way into government, the criminal cabal of globalists, they're not, to me, I don't believe they're going to cede their power easily.
No, and there's things like you know, Obama trying to push the TPP through before the end of his term. He's got some more issues on with gun rights. He's just recently issued a executive order dealing with biological threats and I have it up here, the advancing the global health security agenda to achieve a world safe and secure from infectious diseases and threats. Expect more executive orders and, you know, changes that are rushed in as the next 2 months without a Hillary Clinton presidency in the future. He is probably feeling the pressure of needing to finish an agenda that he has been carrying on since he's been in office.
Well, the man with the finger on the pulse of what's going on is, of course, Stuart Rhodes from Oath Keepers, oathkeepers.org. Visit that site. They've got some terrific informational articles there. And without any further ado, Mr. Stuart Rhodes, welcome to the Hagmann Report.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh man, you know, it's good to talk with you. We've heard so much about you, your organization here in the past, in the past couple of years. You're doing a great service in our estimation by holding the people who have taken an oath to the Constitution, holding their feet to the fire to the extent that they need to uphold the tenets of the Constitution. And we just want to say thank you for that and for your active you're right on the money with holding the people with the power accountable to the people. So thank you. Where do you want to start tonight? There's so much going on.
Well, we can start with, I think it would be good to start with, you know, for context, why the Democrats lost. It could be useful for understanding what's going to happen. And I think one of the main reasons they lost is they spent 8 years demonizing anybody who dared to question anything Obama did. Like, look at myself. During the Bush years, I criticized the Bush administration pretty strongly for the Patriot Act and for many of the expansions of executive power during the, you know, post 9/11. But when Obama came in and he was doing almost the exact same thing and even worse, when I criticized him, all of a sudden now I become a racist, which is just complete garbage. And I think what happened with the left is they believed that they had already consolidated enough to gain a majority through illegal immigration, and also through manipulation of populations that they, like blacks and Hispanics, who they want to, you know, condition to think that they only have a home in the Democratic Party. So part of their way of doing that is to convince them that all of us, anybody else who speaks up against their ideals, is somehow racist. You know, never willing to take you on your argument on its own terms, what you actually are arguing or standing for. So I think, but they spent all that time demonizing everyone, and so at least half the country now looks at them as illegitimate liars with no goodwill, who are their to the death enemies, and so we have no common cause with them, and no interest in anything they have to say, and of course no interest in voting for their candidates. You know, and then they cheated Bernie Sanders out. He was the, you know, probably the rightful nominee, but they, through election fraud and through the voting machines, they stole the election, the primary from Sanders. And so they insisted on running. Of course, he's a communist himself, but, you know, at least he wasn't as corrupt as Hillary Clinton. So they insisted on running an insider who we all loathe and hate, based upon, well, look at Waco. She was sitting there watching, you know, those women and children burn in Waco. All that after Benghazi, all the things she's done, all the corruption and criminality, she should be in prison. So, you know, they insisted on running this corrupt, horrendous person, and it should not be a shock that they lost. And I think Michael Moore also had a good point to make, which I usually don't agree with Michael Moore on anything, but he said that Trump is the Molotov cocktail from the American working class against the establishment after having had all their jobs sucked out. Like, you know, Ross Perot said, he was correct about NAFTA. It's the giant sucking sound of American jobs leaving this country. And I think, you know, the American working class finally got sick and tired of it. So all those things combined, and of course, gun control. We all know that Hillary, she got in office, would do her dead level best to, you know, whether by executive fiat or through legislation, destroy the Second Amendment or through appointments on the Supreme Court. So you combine all of those things, it was not a shock at all that, that Trump won. And I think he actually won by a far larger margin than is reflected in the results because of the vote fraud. There was systemic vote fraud going into it. We all knew it. They, of course, denied it every step of the way, even after it was shown by WikiLeaks and by Project Veritas to be true. So I think it was actually a much larger landslide than is reflected.
No, I totally agree with you on that. And it's interesting you point out, too, it's interesting, too, the way you point out there was so much talk about the blue wall, which has been, you know, pushed over by Trump and his supporters. The states that represent the upper Midwest, if you will, of the very
West
people
Belt.
That you described. Yeah, there you go. Yes, yes. And to a large extent, we're part of that as well. The Northwest Pennsylvania, Northeastern Ohio, it's all been gutted. And I think, you know, it's just, yes, I totally agree. In hindsight, I mean, a postmortem of this election, indeed, we can point to, you know, the victory of, or why the victory. Now, okay, having said all of that, a couple of things. Number one, there is a petition. Change.org is running a petition, which is, I believe, is funded, of course, by the Soros and Clinton people, to challenge or to compel the Electoral College to not vote Trump in. That's number one. And number two, then, of course, we've got the more visible component, the chaos that's being really, it's not organic. These are not organic protests. These aren't even protests. These are riots, and they're orchestrated. So we've got this taking place right now. And we spoke before the show. It dangerous times, right? I mean, the blowback here. And you got celebrities too that, you know, these mouthpieces, these idiotic mouthpieces, who people listen to, who the snowflakes listen to, making jokes and attempting to delegitimize the victory of Donald Trump. So all of this combined, it's kind of a very, dry tinder here in America today.
Well, what you have is the same, you know, radical Marxists who were driving the agenda over the last 8 years and conditioning people. They've been successful. I mean, you've always leftists running around, and quite a few of them are very sincere. They actually think that we're all a bunch of racists, that we're a bunch of Nazis. They're going to lock them in concentration camps. I think the ones at the top know better, and this is just part of their tactic. But so now that they use that tactic to try to consolidate power and prevail. Now they couldn't do that through the electoral process. Now they're going to use it to try to ferment, you know, chaos, creative chaos, or as they're calling it, constructive apocalypse. That's actually a term being thrown around by Black Lives Matter leadership and Black Panther leadership, New Black Panthers, about a possible methodology of forcing what we're seeing now, trying to force the Electoral College to go the other way. And it's very similar to what Soros sponsored in the Ukraine. It's similar to the overthrow in Egypt and Tunisia. You know, they can create a crisis situation and create a vacuum and then put their favorite person in. So I think the greatest danger we're in right now is that they're up against, you know, they're back against the wall, they're cornered. And a lot of these ancient communists are about ready to die. You know, and George Soros himself is ready to kick the bucket soon. You know, and you got guys like Bill Ayers. I mean, all of these radical and ideologues who are, you know, George Soros' surrogates are feeling like this is their last chance. And they thought they were going to be able to usher in Hillary Clinton and then finish the work. But now they have to do something else. And the only other thing they possibly have is to try to cause chaos and interrupt the inauguration. So between now and the inauguration, I think, is a very dangerous time for this country. And we will see, you know, we're already starting to see, but I think you're going to see a wave of violence, pretty much like you saw in the 70s with the Weather Underground bombings and assassination attempts. So I think it's coming.
Yeah.
And so, you know, all of it designed to put pressure, you know, just like they'll burn down a city practically and loot, and it's putting pressure on politicians to, you know, it's like either you go along with what we want or we're going to burn the whole place down.
Exactly, and I'm glad you mentioned the template from the 70s or late 60s, early 70s, the Weather Underground and Bill Ayers, and you know before he passed, we had Larry Grothwell on numerous times on our program describing the tactics of Ayers and such. So, I mean, what you're seeing right now, of course, and I think you're doing a great job of calling attention to it, is this controlled opposition in the President-elect Trump environment. But I think we've got to continue to expose the people behind this. Indeed. Now, what's your position? Have you been talking with law enforcement? I'm sure you have, all across the country, about what's taking place. What are you hearing about this?
Well, of course, they can see right through the propaganda about racism. They know they're not racist, and they've been the target of Black Lives Matter now for a couple of years. And what's interesting about it is, as the more extreme, the more the left jumps the shark when it comes to, you know, labeling everyone a racist or labeling every cop a racist and a killer, all it does is it makes the police understand that the propaganda that they've heard against veterans or against Oath Keepers and other groups, that's all crap. You know, they saw us standing out guarding the recruiting centers after the Chattanooga attack. You know, it was us and other veterans, 3% of groups and Oath Keepers out there with rifles in our hands protecting the recruiters against terrorism. So the cops are starting to see past the Southern Poverty Law Center and ADL propaganda, and left media propaganda too. The left media, of course, is lock, stock, right in with them. So, but you know, the more they do it, and after they've done it for 8 years straight, you know, whenever they call anybody who disagrees with them pretty much Hitler, it wears thin after a while, and it loses its power. And so I think what we're seeing now, thankfully, is a unification of the American warrior class. And that's been one of my goals from the start, is to bring together the veterans and the police and the current serving military and the gun owners. I mean, gun owners are part of the American warrior class as well. These are all the people who will keep order and preserve life, liberty, and property when it's under threat, and ultimately preserve the Constitution. And of course, we can't turn a blind eye to problems we've seen within law enforcement, and we don't. But I think in the long term, it's best for us as patriots to do what we can to unify with them against this common threat, while respecting the Constitution. So I think that's the blessings come out of this, is that the more they take off the mask, and they've begun to take it all the way off. Now you see the hammer and sickle red flag flying. Now you see, you know, socialists out, world socialist movements and RevCom, which is revolutionary communist group, Soros funded. Now you see them leading these parades and leading these protests. So they're exposing themselves where they really are. All along they've been communists, and they're not, you know, they call themselves progressive, they call themselves liberals, but what they really are is communists. Does not mean the average rank and file Democrat is necessarily a communist, but it does mean their party is infested with them and definitely run by them. So, or what you could call, like in Clinton's case, a corporate oligarch. But they use the communist as their foot soldiers.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something I think a lot of people, especially and including the people who are bust in and take part of the protest, really don't understand that they're just acting as the useful idiots, as by definition.
Stuart, with this Trump presidency, this Trump win against Hillary Clinton, and you know, really this internal Marxist Muslim coup that we've been talking about, how dangerous of a time is it for Americans, as Obama has 2 months left before Trump's inauguration? Do you see him trying to do anything, just completely off the walls as far as executive orders, or trying to create some other type of crisis that would enable him to stay in office longer? Or do you think he's just going to be the lame duck president that he is and let the days roll by until he can just leave the White House and go about his life?
Don't know. It's hard to say. And we hear that he hates Hillary Clinton and doesn't really care about her. So it's possible that you know, as long as he thinks his own personal legacy is intact, then he's good to go. I don't know. I think the risk is there, though, and so I think that we should presume the worst and prepare for it in case it happens.
Well,
much like Mr. Wall said, prepare for, like, imagine if they decided to, you know, do a scorched earth response to this anti-globalist victory, which is what I think Trump's victory is. Imagine if they decided to, you know, through orchestrated riots and potentially even sparking a race war, you know, which none of us want, but I think they might. You know, this is part of their whole purpose, is to get everybody who's not pure white to think that all white people are their enemies. And, of course, the flip side of that is it makes whites feel like they're being attacked as well. So they, you know, it could be that Soros sitting up there looks at this and says, I want to destroy this country. I don't really care how we do it. We can do it through multiple methods. One method is a race war. One method is economic collapse. One method could be an EMP, you know, EMP strike. We don't know. So any of those things could be a catalyst for Obama, whether he's in on it or not, deciding to declare, you know, emergency powers and perhaps delay inauguration. So it's possible. I mean, throughout the world, look at the past pattern of behavior of radical Marxists. They don't give up power easily. They don't just walk away because they're defeated in an election. They do what they're doing now. They try to find a different way to get it done. So they want power. They're used to having power. They thought they had a permanent lock on it, but they don't. And so now they want to try to get it back by any means necessary. So I think people should presume the worst. And between now and January 20th, they should do a sprint of preps, making sure that they have food and water, that they have communications, that they have some kind of mutual aid and security with their neighbors. And in particular, I would say the neighborhood watch is most important, and then also food. So if you can't, you know, if you don't eat, you can't fight. So you can't secure anything if you're starving to death. But the flip side of that is you have to have security too. The secret squirrel prepper who hides in the basement and doesn't want their neighbors to know they have food is not gonna. That's not a recipe for success either, because you're vulnerable. If if your perimeter is your four walls, your house, you're done. All it takes is a local gang to roll through your neighborhood, house to house. What are you gonna do? So you got to come together with your neighbors, and I think people should make that the focus point of their effort right now as neighborhood watches.
You know, here we've got about 4 minutes to the bottom of the hour, but I, when we come back on the other side, I do want to get your input. And you've got a number of initiatives a number of initiatives. I'll just leave it at that. That we'll talk about.
Yeah, we want to know where the Oath Keepers are going from here, they have their eyes on, and
well, and folks, go to oathkeepers.org, and it's interesting to read about Navy Jack Battleground America. Of course, it was just updated. I think it was yesterday on oathkeepers.org website, and of course, their website as well. Just is filled with a lot of good information, and it's interactive. And there's memberships to Oath Keepers. You don't have to be a commissioned law enforcement officer necessarily to become a member and to become part of Oath Keepers. But having said that, I'm going to ask you, have you seen a rise before the break? Have you seen a rise of late of interest in your organization by law enforcement because of the, well, we'll just call it blowback to the communist Obama style leadership throwing law enforcement under the bus?
Oh, absolutely. And the attack on police, too, and now they're being targeted by terrorists. That's, I think, like I said, they're starting to see that the propaganda they've been fed about us was wrong, and they're starting to see that we're exactly who they need to be aligned with for their own protection, frankly, for them and their families.
And that's good, yeah. Yeah, and of course today I'd be remiss to not to mention today being Veterans Day. Of course, you've got a salute to veterans on your website, and you know, we thank all of our veterans, members of the military, for their sacrifice, and I'm sure that the same is happening with the military as well, and the recognition that our Constitution is under assault. You must be seeing it tremendously.
Yeah, absolutely. So I would say that at least 75% of the military now is wide awake and aware of what's been done and what we just barely dodged a bullet. You know, we just, frankly, I think if Hillary had been elected and she had, you know, managed to claw her way into power, I think we would have been in a civil war in short order. But we might wind up there anyway if the radical left has their way. They're not going away. You know, this is the problem, is we now have a divided country where at least half the country is buying, drinking the Kool-Aid of the radical left. And unless we can, you know, deprogram them and make them see the light and see that we're not trying to, you know, kill them all and put them in concentration camps, I think a lot of them are reacting out of fear now. So, you know, the shoe's on the other foot. They're about to lose all power and about to have, you know, someone they detest in the reins of power, and a power that Obama has exponentially increased during his two terms. So, you know, the stakes are higher. And this is one of the problems, that the more power is put in the hands of the presidency, it becomes an imperial presidency, and the more there's a legitimate reason to fear it because it is so almost unlimited. So, you know, in the interest of all Americans, left or right, we need to get back to a limited government under the Constitution.
Amen to that, Mr. Rhodes. We are up against our break. We'll be back after these short messages with Stuart Rhodes from Oath Keepers, the founder of Oath Keepers. We're going to get into a number of other important issues and look at where we need to go from here under a Donald Trump presidency and what to expect.
If we get there.
Yeah, if we get there. We'll be right back, folks, on this Friday edition. Stay with us.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Our very special guest, Mr. Stuart Rhodes, oathkeepers.org. 2 years ago, 18 months, I don't know, I'll say 2 years ago, I'm reminded there was a race for a county sheriff, and one of the candidates I happened to meet in the courthouse, he was filing some papers, and actually he was on the steps, and he asked me for support. I said, are you a member of Oath Keepers? And he said, who? What? And I took that opportunity to explain to him what Oath Keepers is and explain to him why he could not count on my support because of his lack of knowledge of Oath Keepers. And he lost, and that's that. Now, the current sheriff, I know, is very much aware of Oath Keepers. But, again, very special guest, Mr. Stuart Rhodes. Before we get back to him, folks, the first hour we were talking with James Rawls, and we're talking about survival points. So let me give you a perfect survival cooking stove. Let me just tell you about MinutemanStove.com, folks. The Minuteman stove is a ammo can, refashioned, insulated to burn wood, a very small amount that will give you the energy comparable to a kitchen stove. No kidding. And folks, you're always going to be able to find enough fuel for the Minuteman stove because it doesn't take that much. It's fully insulated with ceramic refractory insulation. It focuses the heat.
Inch reinforced steel.
Oh man, it's really great. Again, it's like a kitchen stove. It also can be used on a picnic table because of that insulation Joe referenced. It protects the outside. And the outside, even at full throttle, it only reaches about 200 degrees. But this is self-contained, seals airtight for travel, storage. It's the absolute best cooking stove on the market, bar none. And it's a 50-caliber ammo can, like I said. It weighs about 14 pounds. It travels clean, no smells, no soot. We'll get inside your vehicle. And if giving away your position is a concern, no smoke. I mean, it's virtually smokeless. We've had it full bore outside of our studios, and it works just as advertised. And, you know, these stoves are made in America. They're also serving with our troops overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're handmade. They're battle-proven. They're extremely rugged. And you know what? They come with a 2-year no-hassle warranty. And I would tell you this, or I will tell you this, that to date, no one has ever used. Folks, fire starters as well. Go to MinutemenStove.com, shop away. They have our seal of approval. And one more thing, I'm going to thank everyone. Yesterday we were talking about support, and you know, we're all in this together. Those of you who really have come together and are helping us expand, because we are outpacing our supply lines, I just want to say, give you a heartfelt thank you from all of us here. Thank you. And whether it's a note of encouragement, your support, prayers, whatever it might be, we're all in this together, and I just want to say thank you for that. Now, Stuart Rhodes, again, is our guest, oathkeepers.org. The previous segment, he mentioned constructed apocalypse. I never heard that before. I don't know. I've never heard that before. All of these things that have... that right now face us. On oathkeepers.org website, there's an article here, Navy Jack, Operation Hypo, infiltrating the protests against the president-elect. You want to talk about Operation Hypo, Stuart, or do you want to go in a different direction?
No, that's fine. We can talk about that. What that is a continuation of what we just got done doing in the lead-up to the election was Operation Sabo, which was to go and covertly spot for any attempted voter fraud or intimidation. And that was a very successful program. We have our intelligence operatives now all over the country to part in that. And all we're doing is rolling those same people over into now infiltrating these leftist groups who are doing their best. It is AstroTurf. They're busting people in from all over the place to riot, but it's dangerous AstroTurf, and so we want to expose their intentional manipulation of people and their attempt to spark violence, much like Project Veritas exposed what they call bird dogging, where they sent in, operatives to go into Trump rallies and instigate confrontations and get a reaction from the Trump crowd and create conflict or shut down a freeway. These are people that were caught on video camera covertly admitting that they had done these things. They'd created confrontations and in fact went out and blocked freeways and incited assaults on people. And so we think that if we go out there and infiltrate these groups, we will have a chance of exposing them and perhaps gathering enough evidence for prosecution. And by us being out there and doing this, they'll be more likely to, watch what they're doing and maybe not try to do it in the first place.
Joe and I were reviewing some videos that were uploaded to Twitter and other social networking feeds, and they're ubiquitous. So many videos out there of these protests. And we looked, Joe, I can't remember if it was, during the height of the Black Lives Matter protests in this past summer to the anti-Trump result protests here of the last 3 days, we were able to identify, I think, three or four individuals, the same people. Not just the same body types, but the same faces in these protests. So, you are, if I hear you correctly, you're infiltrating these groups, identifying these people, and combating against them by way of exposing them, right? This is...
Right.
Yeah. Go ahead.
That's what we're looking for. We're looking for the ones that you can see over and over again going to the same events. And we're seeing the same thing you're seeing. We're noticing not just, same groups, but same people. So yeah, it really is this small core of radicals who are funded by Soros who are running around from one place to another, trying to ramp up as much fear and hatred in young college students. You know, young kids full of mush, but they get them stirred up and believing that they're going to be rounded up and put in the concentration camps. And that's why they're around. You see them on YouTube crying. And, you know, they're worried about whether or not they're going to see the next birthday and whether or not they're going to be in a, you know, in an oven soon. And I think a lot of them really have bought all the crap. They bought into it, and they believe that we're Nazis, and they believe we're racist. And so, you know, like I said before, we have to make sure that we do what we can to, you know, counter that propaganda. That's why I'm relying. We got black police officers in national leadership. We got one on our board of directors, and we have black oath keepers in leadership in our state SEAL organizations too. And so, and Hispanics. And so I'm tapping into them to, you know, be right up front and center and saying, you know, we're not a racist organization, and people who support Trump are not racist. I mean, you know, the left will go out and find that the small tiny minority of KKK or skinheads that are still left out there, and of course they give them all the news coverage, and David Duke and other clowns like that, so that they can paint the picture of all of us being racist. So I think it's important for us to make sure that we counter that, and also that we don't buy into it. I mean, you know, Trump got 22% of the Hispanic vote, and it might have something to do with all the spirit cooking videos that came out. You know, a lot of Hispanics don't like that kind of stuff. That whole voodoo or Santeria stuff is kind of scary to them. But anyway, yeah. he got a pretty larger percentage of the vote among Hispanics than they expected. And he also got 10% of the black vote. And I think it's important for us to keep working in those communities to, you know, counter this propaganda. Because the radical left, they went from back in the day trying to, trying to unite all the workers of the world, unite, and making economic arguments. That fell on its face, and the Berlin Wall fell, and everyone saw the absolute disaster of communism. Then they shifted to environmentalism, and I call them watermelons. They're green on the outside, red on the inside. They try to scare people into becoming a communist for the environment. That had, limited appeal, limited ability to bring people on board. And so then they switched to racism. They switched to, if you oppose what we're doing and oppose the social justice, then you're a racist. And that's their latest gamble, is trying to, focus on black and brown people and make them convinced that their only home is the Democratic Party and everybody else is out to get them. So that's sort of their last hurrah, is to become racist, basically. So ironically, they're actually attempting to drive blacks into identifying only along racial lines, and Hispanics also. So rather than uniting this country, that's why Obama has been the great divider. You know, he's not done anything to unite us. He's been extremely divisive. So we need to understand that's all they have left. Racism is their only strategy left. So let's make sure we don't buy into it ourselves and make sure we counter it.
Yeah, you make some great points there. And one thing that's so interesting is the media's role in this presidential election, and how there was a point at sometime here in the not too distant past where the media came, instead of being journalists, became, cheerleaders and partners with, this governmental crime syndicate that we see. And I think the toll that the media played in promoting the racist lines and, the hate lines that they say Trump was spewing. One thing that was sad, you mentioned the YouTube videos of people crying and the liberal tears and rants after Hillary lost. I was surprised to see how many children were in those videos crying, because Hillary Clinton lost, and thinking, why are children so upset by this? But the media has really done a number on the people who pay attention to it, and they have, fueled the fire, this fire. And as you said, it's just the perception of racism, and it's getting to the point. I see now in Albuquerque public schools, they're sending letters home to students for fears of deportation due to a Donald Trump presidency, after the families are speaking out scared about their future here in this country. What is the future of the mainstream media after the whole country has seen through their twisted lies and biases?
Do they have a future?
I hope not. I hope they die. I mean, you know, I'm going to be boycotting them, and I think the best thing we can do is just boycott them, turn them off. Don't go to them. Don't click to them. Don't, you know, don't link to them. Just let them die away. They're nothing but a propaganda arm for the radical left. So, you know, and I think they pretty much jumped the shark. They threw their all they had into the ring. Everything they had, they threw in this last election, and they went, you know, went full broke. And I think now that they lost, they've got nothing left, no more credibility. You know, the WikiLeaks, you know, emails show that many of them are in direct collusion. Those are the ones we know about. But every single major media outlet all parrots the same line. Racism, KKK, Nazi, you know, same mantra. White men that don't like a black president, white men that feel like the demographics are changing against them, you know, so they're just racializing everything. But people are sick and tired of being called a racist for waking up in the morning and taking a breath. They're sick of it. And they've seen through it, and so now it has no more force or effect. And so the media has lost all credibility and lost all power. Except over these unfortunate people that have bought into the propaganda, you know. So, like I said, I think it's important for us to do what we can to, you know, have some goodwill and reach out to the rank and file. At least you're not going to reach the minds of the leadership. You know, they're dyed in the wool manipulators, but the rank and file Democrat out there who sincerely believes we're all Nazis, perhaps we can get them to see that we're really not. And I think the best way to do that is, like I said, utilize our black and Hispanic conservatives and libertarians and constitutionalists to be the ones that go out there and reach out first.
You and your organization have close the ties, and many of your members are former military. And you guys have close ties to people in the military in all branches.
A lot of our guys are still in. We have current serving that are still in both active duty military and National Guard.
Can you share some of the sentiments of the people that are in the military about the direction of this country and
specifically under Obama? I mean, aside from the obvious, I think, Joe. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, they don't like the partisanship. Quite a few of them, they come from a family that's historically served in the military, as is mine. You know, most of us are like that. Multiple generations have served, and they don't like. They're sincerely nonpartisan. They don't like the partisanship, the rancor, the hatred. They hate it. They hate the hatred. So that's one thing that I've heard over and over again from guys that have come back from being overseas for years is they can't believe the amount of animosity and hatred they see all over the web, all over the news, and in the comments on a lot of these articles. You know. You'll see leftists who are calling for drone strikes, calling us all low wattage voters, calling us all racist, of course, and they don't like it at all, and it really has you know, made them feel like their country has deteriorated severely, and so they would like to see Americans come together and get past this, but then they also realize that, you know, these radical Marxist ideologues, they have no goodwill, and they're never going to change. So what do you do with people like that? So how do you reconcile? How do you coexist with someone that wants to destroy your country, who wants to overthrow your government under the Constitution, and wants to destroy the Constitution? You know, what do you do with someone like that? So that's the sentiment that I see in the military, is a lot of frustration with the division in this country and the partisan party loyalty that's loyal to party over country.
Exactly. Well, well said. I got to ask you, Mr. Rhodes, and this is kind of, to me, this is humorous. You know, when we talk about the snowflakes and the real
social justice warriors.
So, well, I wouldn't even give them that distinction. Or
aren't they one of the same? The snowflake.
You know what? That makes it sound too good. How about this name? How about Miranda Blue? Okay. I don't know if you're
even, going over my head,
Mr. Rose. I'm not even sure if you know Miranda Blue. Apparently, she's got a real, you know, rifle scope on Oath Keepers, and of course yourself. She's with Right Wing Watch, and every time I turn around, you know, she's flapping her lips about the anti-government group Oath Keepers. My goodness, I just get so tired of hearing these these mush for brains morons. Seriously.
Right. How are we anti-government when we advocate loyalty to an oath, to a constitution that established a government?
Thank you.
And
yeah.
We're all either current serving or former government employees. It's kind of bizarre.
Yeah, I kind of wanted to ask you about this. I mean, here is this person, supposedly this research editor for Right Wing Watch, and has got all these credentials and can't even define what your group... I mean, this to me is pure slander, libelous crap that she's spewing. It's almost... humorous to the point, well, except it's not funny at all, but you're getting piled on by groups like Right Wing Watch and other groups. In fact,
that's how you know you're the target when you're getting flack. You know, this is what they're doing. But what's funny about it is that now they're saying about absolutely anybody who voted for Trump, for example, and so they're now calling the great majority of the, you know, the American, I guess you'd call it, you know, over half this country, I would say, they're labeling racist. If you voted for Trump or you're sympathetic to those arguments or if you're anybody but a Marxist, basically, that they call a racist. And so, you know, it's lost power. They all look around, and that's why folks are running around with deplorable stickers on their cars and deplorable T-shirts, you know, because they're wearing it as a badge of honor. And that's kind of how we see it, too.
Yeah. Well, I find it humorous. Sad, actually, but somewhat humorous when Oath Keepers is described as an anti-government organization, when in fact Black Lives Matter
is on the top of the, you know, good list.
can I ask, because of this, and then I'll stop this, because it's really meaningless, I think, that to even give the time to morons like this. Yes, I did call this Miranda Blue a moron. That's me speaking, Doug Hagman.
I'll second that.
Okay, there you go. Well, okay, her last, one of her last, if not her last column was... Oath Keepers prepare for post-election false flags, Black Lives Matter, IED attacks. But there's a reference made to the incognito intelligence gathering and crime spotting teams on election day, where, you know, you referenced it, Operation Sabat, I believe, right? Where you went in.
Sabo.
Or Sabo, I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah.
Nah, I'm the moron. Anyway. results, findings from that operation? Can you disclose anything? I mean,
yes and no. We had teams out, and they were effective. Let's put it that way. And we don't want to say a whole lot more because those same teams are now rolling right into what we're doing now and infiltrating these groups. So I do think I think our presence made a difference. Frankly, like I said earlier, I think the vote fraud was so severe that it took a landslide to beat it. But I think not only us, but other groups out there, Project Veritas, Stop the Steal, there was a bunch of folks out there doing poll watching. And I think that made a difference. It made it much more difficult for the bad guys to know if they're going to be found out. And one of the things we did is we targeted particular areas where we thought vote fraud was most likely for subpoena for the machines. You go in and after the polls closed, submit a subpoena to get the machine information before they purge it out of the machines. So I think all of those efforts went a long ways towards making them, you know, concerned about trying to go too far too fast. So it still happened. We saw what happened. For example, in Virginia, you know, the governor right in front of everyone's face just went ahead and pardoned, what was it, 60,000 felons.
Yeah.
And through robo-signing. So there was, you know, there were things they tried to do, but I think that the presence out there of everyone watching so carefully cut back on it, and it wouldn't have mattered anyway, frankly. Look at the, you know, the overwhelming tsunami of support. I think it would have overwhelmed it anyway.
No, I think you're right, too. Yeah. I do not, for one second, believe that Hillary Clinton got, you know, 50 million plus votes naturally. I believe that it was, you know, like you said, there was so much Trump support. The silent majority stepped up, came out and voted, in such a way, giving Trump a landslide victory, that it beat all of the ballot stuffing, it beat the dead voter rolls, and it beat, you know, the push of illegal immigrants to vote. And I think it had to be that way, because I believe that they, like a lot of the mistakes they made when creating the polling numbers and all those crazy polls we saw months before the election, where Hillary had 12-point lead, 15-point lead, 10-point lead. They used the demographics from, you know, the last two elections, where you had a lot more African Americans and others come out and vote for Obama. And I think they underestimated how badly the American people wanted to change, saw the problems, the lies in the media, the lies from the administration. You want your doctor, you can keep your doctor. And if it was not for, you know, the people coming out, the vast majority of people coming out to vote, I believe it was, I saw a statistic, either 78% or 71% of the evangelicals came out to vote. I think without, you know, that amount of support for Trump, that the stuffing of the ballot boxes would have given Hillary the win. And looking at the size of the rallies between Trump and Clinton, Clinton couldn't even get 1,000 people to go to her rallies unless she had some star-studded celebrity lineup. And even then, she couldn't match the support that Trump had on the ground in all these different places. So it makes no sense to me, the number of votes that she got versus the actual support we saw her have at these different public events.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah, just like she did with Sanders. I mean, you know, like I said before, I'm no fan of Sanders, but it's pretty much a foregone proven conclusion that, you know, I think Berkeley and Stanford both did studies on it. Wherever there were no paper trails and only electronic machines, there were all kinds of errors that just happened to go Hillary's way. And they said the odds of that happening accidentally or by chance were 1 in 77 billion is what they said in their reports. So obviously she used machine vote fraud to steal the primary from Sanders. And as you said, if it weren't for the overwhelming response from the American people, it would have gone the same way in the general election.
Yeah.
So I agree. I don't think she. I mean, you know, of course, we're not done counting either. Ironically, the leftists that are petitioning or calling on the electors to, you know, not support Trump and go against the, you know, the standard rules in their state. Ironically, they're saying they should do that because she won the popular vote, but they're still counting it. So it's possible he might tip over the edge and take the popular vote.
Exactly. And it's interesting to, I found it really interesting that, now I didn't know this, that so some of the mail-in ballots don't have to be counted in some states.
And not to mention all the ballots, they found garbage bags of uncounted Trump ballots in parking lots in different polling locations. And you had the whole Broward County.
Crazy.
Yeah, there was a lot of, and in Florida, in Broward County, they, I think Brenda Spears was her name. They had, I forget how many, tens of thousands of Trump ballots that they couldn't count due to their excuse, moisture, sticking the envelopes together that they had to throw away. And just like you said, just a number of these anomalies, and from what the report you just cited, leading up to the odds of the billions of this happening. And every time a machine was, you know, you picked Donald Trump and it flipped to Hillary Clinton, you never saw it the opposite, where you picked Hillary Clinton and it flipped to Donald Trump. The odds in the billions. Folks, you're listening to Stuart Rhodes of OathKeepers.com. And he is going to be our guest until the end of this broadcast. We have one more hour left with him.
We owe him a debt of gratitude to his organizations because of the proactive stuff he did at the polls. Let me just say that.
If you have any questions, send us a quick email at studio@HagmanandHagman.com, and we will try to fit those in. And when we come back, we're going to get into another a number of other issues with Stuart Rhodes. So stay with us on this Friday edition.